Welcome to Bridge the Gap with host Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by our supporting partners, NHI, TSO Life, NRC Health, Erdman, Sherpa, TIS, and RCARE. Find out more about this podcast at btgvoice.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast, the senior living podcast. We are in an exciting place in St. Louis, sitting down with the very exotic Alex Fisher.
I knew you were going to use that word.
I only did that because she said that we were exotic, which absolutely makes zero sense.
I'm going to come here every day. Yes.
It's no awesome. One's a prophet in their own land. Yeah. What I meant is not here. You may not be, although I think you are, but in Argentina, anybody that sees you and hears you speak and sees your beards and Slavic, and they'll think, oh, that's so exotic.
Oh, I love
so
that.
So she's easy to love.
Yes, absolutely. You see why we love Alex. Right. So
Alex, you've drawn us in, and I know for a fact that you're going to draw our audience in as well. And many of them you probably know and have worked with. You have a fascinating background. And yes, our podcast is dedicated to senior living, but it's also dedicated to the people and the stories that are doing the business in the senior living industry. And so we want to know more about you. You're an artist. You're a creative thinker. You are definitely out of the box. And we want to know more. Talk to us about your upbringing and where you come from.
Okay, wow.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Start anywhere you want. Just start at the beginning.
The box. Yes. Okay. So I was born in Argentina in La Pampa, Santa Rosa.
La Bamba? Is that what you said?
No, La Pampa. The Pampas.
Pampas.
The Gauchos, okay. The Pampas.
Okay.
My dad had a ranch, so I basically grew up on the ranch and then in the city. Gosh, this could be a very long podcast. But so what was important for me growing up, I love nature. I love solitude. I was unlike most little girls in the sense that, you know, I needed a lot of solitude. So I think maybe that's part of it, being a creative person, which we all are. So the fact that I like to draw early on, it meant that in order for you to draw, you need to be very present and sort of alone with the subject that you're drawing. So I guess I was a little present, very present little girl. But most of my friends called me weird. Well, they didn't call me that to my face, but so one of the things that I keep thinking about is, you know, the fact that growing up, again, lots of solitude, I really enjoyed time on the ranch, just going off by myself. And then every Christmas, or every birthday, my family would say, what would you like for your birthday or for Christmas? And I would say pinturitas, which means things to draw with. Mm-hmm. So that was what happened. And there was an old book at home. It's called Martin Fierro, and it's the chronicles of the different gauchos growing up, gauchos in Argentina, which is the equivalent of the cowboys in the States. Do you have cowboys where you're from?
Right over here. We've got cowboy right across from us.
You got a lot of cowboys.
Have you not seen his boots? He's got cowboy boots on right now.
Oh, you do? Oh, yeah. Guys, you should see the boots.
This is a real live cowboy right
these
across
are amazing.
From you.
Yeah, so I don't those are great. My estimation of you just went up several
That's
points.
That's why I wear them.
Anyway, gauchos, okay? So I digress. And so there's this book, and the book has these beautiful illustrations of very old, withered faces of all these different gauchos. And there's that, and then there's my grandmother, who had a very old, withered face. And this matters because it felt as though, or it seemed as though at the age of 5, maybe, as long as I have memory, I was fascinated with wrinkles. What are those? How do you get those? So I remember asking my grandmother, who didn't like it at all, the fact that I was pointing out her wrinkles. Now I understand what she meant, how she felt. But in any case, I remember pointing to her wrinkles and saying, how did you get these? And I think perhaps what made me out of the box in some sense, although, you know, I don't know if I am, was the fact that I became aware at a very young age that that old person was me in the future. And I don't think it's very common for especially young people to understand that old people are you and they're the trailblazers. To me, it was a mirror to what was sort of the end. This is what we get to be mm-hmm. at the very end. And of course, I was deep and I had questions about existential and do we die and what happens and all that. Again, we are child.
As a five-year-old.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
I know. But I also like to play with dolls and do the, you know, normal stuff. So that awareness, which perhaps I wasn't aware that I was aware of that, but I knew that that was the curiosity. If I'm in this life, again, very contemplative child, if I'm in this life, what does it mean to be human? And where are we going? And especially when we grow old, what happens? You know, what do we know? Is it a good thing? Is it a good outcome or is it a bad outcome? You know, so I drew old faces. I drew wrinkles. And all my friends, I didn't have very many friends, but all the other kids in school, little girls, were drawing princesses and clouds in the sky, you know? Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I drew these old withered faces. Again, added to my reputation as a little weird. And then I realized after, you know, growing up, then we moved to Buenos Aires. I went to high school there. My parents sent me to Europe every year. So I went to school in the morning. I went to school in the regular school year. And then in the summers, I would go to school in the UK. Because my mother, who was a visionary, she's right there in the... Anyway, you can't see it, but... That's me and my mom.
Yeah.
My mom was the one that says, you have to go see the world. Mm-hmm. But I was very inward. I was pretty happy sitting under the eucalyptus tree in the ranch. But she always wanted me to go see the world. She says, you have to get out. You have to learn English. You have to, you know, see the world. So I owe her a lot for that. So there was a weird combination of putting myself out there and wanting to be alone and reflective. And that was always a strain for me. And one that sometimes I think kept me back from truly stepping into what I really wanted to do. I don't know if that makes any sense. Probably not. So in any case, growing up, went to Buenos Aires, which was a great experience. Continued to draw humans. You know, it wasn't, don't give me a landscape. I was just really focused on drawing humans, human faces, human bodies, anything that just said everything, all the landscape is in a person's face, in a person's body, all the landscapes are. If you get very micro view or of a person, you stop identifying an eye as an eye and you start seeing shapes and the ocean and all these wonderful things, right?
Yeah.
So, deeply curious my whole life, and this is probably what got me to where I am today, and I don't know where it's going to take me next, but a real curiosity about humanity mm-hmm. and about what it meant to be human, what it meant to especially get to the end of life, what do we learn? Because I couldn't figure it out, and I thought, okay, these people with all these important wrinkles, which meant they've lived a long time, can tell me. And boy, did they. Mm-hmm. In spades, but I digress. The rest of the story is that at the age of 17, I met a guy from the States. I was working, I was living alone in Buenos Aires. We got married, had three incredible kids, continued to paint, but traveled all over the world because he worked for an oil company. And so I didn't work, quote unquote, in the sense that... you know, I was a mom, I was an artist, and all the time where I would meet different people in different countries, I found that everybody's actually the same. We all want the same thing. We want connection, we want to belong, we want to be seen for who we really are, and that transcends cultures, it transcends, you know, you being, what did you say, from the South?
redneck.
Respectfully, a redneck.
He's a cowboy, I'm a redneck.
redneck.
That's what we call
ourselves.
To me,
that's just spending too much time in the sun. but so you're a redneck, I'm a foreigner. What am I?
You're exotic.
No.
There you go.
You're exotic. Depending on where we are. In St. Louis, I'm exotic. In Argentina, you're exotic. Anyway. But we're all fundamentally have the same need to belong and to connect.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's terrifying, right? So that's what I now know, looking back, that's what I was curious about. And that came through my painting. It came through the way that I raised my kids. It came through, I realized just the way that I was and I behaved, regardless of what you're doing, right? Allowing that natural curiosity or what it is that moves you or your value then creates this incredible path in which you get to know yourself more and more. Got married, ended. I had three incredible kids. They were young. I didn't know what to do. I was painting in Venezuela, which is where we're living at the moment. I feel so bad for Venezuela right now. Wonderful country, wonderful people. And lived there for 6 years, and that's where it just all unraveled. I had a studio and I painted, you know, really important people in Venezuela. I did portraits, which I always loved. But then my life fell completely apart. And everything that I thought I knew about myself, I was very fearful of leaving the relationship, but I needed, wow, this is like a session, yeah? So I really needed to, the impetus for me was to go find out where I could be safe and raise my kids in safety. I didn't feel very safe at the time. So very traumatic for me. It was a really long process. And finally, I decided that I was going to move to St. Louis, of all places in the world. I had no idea.
Why? Why St. Louis?
Because my brother.
Okay.
So I have
okay.
this brother who I love and adore, and he's my only brother. And he happened to go to medical school in St. Louis. Now, I hadn't been to St. Louis before, didn't know anything about it, but he studied in California, and then he got a residency. He entered medical school here in St. Louis. So when you are in times of crisis and you're very, very vulnerable, you gravitate to family, or at least being close. It's not that I was going to ask him for help, because I had a very hard time asking for help. Don't we all?
Yes.
We say we love to help people, but then we don't want to be helped. Mm-hmm. This is bad. Mm-hmm. We have to fix this. Anyway, I digress. I was talking about my brother, and I needed that support, even though it was just his presence and the fact that we were connected as family. So I packed my kids and moved to St. Louis, and I said, okay, great. I'm going to paint great portraits here for important people. that didn't work.
You're fine.
Because, you know, there's times in your lives in which in your life that you don't really plan, there are crises, and it just sort of sets something else in motion. And I got here, I got a little studio, I got my canvases, and I stared at that canvas for days and months and almost months. And I decided I need a real job. I can't paint. I can't paint anymore.
Wow.
You know, everything was falling apart. I have these kids, and Francisco, my oldest, needed braces.
That's not cheap.
No, it wasn't. And I had no income, and the reason, and so I'm completely full disclosure, but I had no means of support because that was gone when my marriage broke up.
Sure.
And so somebody says, hey, do you know there's a place here at the Gatesworth? I said, what's the Gatesworth? It's a retirement community. Oh my God, what's a retirement community? It's, you know, a place where, oh my gosh, those places, I would never work for one of those places. Are you kidding me? That's not glamorous. That's depressing. That's, my thought was the nursing homes in Santa Rosa where really mean people put their parents that were demented and they didn't care enough about their parents. And it was my vision. And then I had a different vision of myself at that time, which was I was coming in from the high of painting all these people, and I thought, okay, that's my path. You know, I'm going to become a famous portrait painter.
And all those captive wrinkles in that one senior living community you could have
I know, but I didn't see the connection at the time.
Okay, okay.
Because sometimes you're so very wrapped up in your own sorriness that you just don't see it. You just didn't have the, I didn't have the perspective.
I think we've all been there at some point.
I think we are, right? Yeah. I hope so. Because if that makes me unique, I'm in deep trouble.
No, that's a part of life's journey.
It is. Yeah, it is. So anyway, back up to, I met David, and all of a sudden I thought, well, this is something else. This is special. But really what was the most special is I went in, I had a ton of preconceived notions. Number one, I don't want to sell anything, but it was a job and I needed a job. I needed braces. I needed health insurance. And so I went. And David interviewed me with some other people. But when I walked in the Gatesworth, I remember there was a very nice doorman, which just makes the Gatesworth great. I walked in and I said, wow, a doorman. So all of a sudden it started to shatter my vision of what these places were like based on my experiences. But then I walk in and I meet Mr. Weiss, who's in there, and I immediately like, oh, this is cool. There's an old person right there, you know, that I could talk to. And then I realized they want to talk to you. And because they have things to, they have a lot to say. Nobody seems to want to talk to them very much. So anyway, I think I was hooked then. Mm. I can do this. Well, I wasn't sure then. Sorry, I digress. Then I went into the interview. And then I met David, and the way that he interviewed me was, maybe he talked about this already.
So we had some discussion with him, and so we didn't get the awesome story that you just told us as far as the backstory, which is amazing. So thank you for sharing that. I think our audience just will
maybe
love
I
to hear that.
Shared a bit?
Not at all. We might dive even deeper if we keep talking.
Let's do it. But, I like deep. Everybody accuses me.
You know, I will say one central theme word that sticks out to me from when I was talking with David and simply asking him, well, Alex is awesome. How'd you meet her? How'd you find her? You know, all that. And he said, you were basically at the point with your kids. Mm-hmm. You were trying to find a job. You applied. And the one thing, you know, he said you were worried about was finding insurance and playing for health things. And you mentioned the braces. So that ties in really well with where he picked up the story. But one word that stuck out to me from my conversation with David, which you touched on multiple times in this conversation, is the word and the theme of curiosity.
Yeah.
And it's been apparently a theme of your life since very early. But he, you know, we were talking to him and he feels like that is probably one of the things that was most attractive about the relationship and probably one of the greatest keys to your success and that has pushed you forward is constantly being curious, constantly learning, seeking knowledge. So
thank you for that. It's extremely flattering, but absolutely I that I was talking about before in a very long-winded way about just being curious about humanity. And that's why people accuse me of being deep, is the key to, because then you're also curious about yourself and your own humanity, because probably starts there, right? But then you start like, okay, am I alone in this? Mm-hmm. Okay, I see that I'm a human. It's weird. You know, we're going to go through this journey and some things feel good. Some things feel bad. There's people I love and there's people I don't like very much. All this stuff happens and then you get old. Mm-hmm. I didn't know at that time that but I knew that I was going to get old. Mm. And the curiosity which led me to paint, or at least I manifested that deep curiosity for humans and connection. I realize now that I manifested it through painting other people, because then again, you get to be in the moment, very present, and you have to be very connected to someone to truly be able to draw them. To draw them, you have to feel it, you have to sense it, you have to just be right there. Actually, you don't have to do anything, you have to just let it inform you, that person in front of you, and then you can draw it. And you have to let go of the outcome. So when you're trying to do something really, really hard and then you're worried about the outcome, it doesn't come out. Mm-hmm. When you're in the moment, really connected in the process, that's when true connection happens. But it's difficult to let go of the outcome. So I manifested all that in my painting, and then I had to get braces and all of that, and I didn't realize that then I was going to manifest that same curiosity in sales.
Because you didn't want to sell anything, right?
Well, I didn't want to tell people what to do.
Right.
I didn't want to be inauthentic. I had this thought that being in sales meant that you have to be inauthentic, that you have to manipulate someone into doing something that they may not want to do. So again, preconceived notions. I had no idea that sales could be so heroic. And this is my theme, that when you allow your curiosity and you become connected for other persons and you're present and for other people, for your community, for yourself, when you allow yourself to get vulnerable and curious and then also open enough for somebody else to know you, that's when the magic happens. And I thought that I couldn't do any of those things if I went into sales. And then I realized that the theme, the hero, is that person that's able to truly be with somebody else, which is the one way that you help that person. And what's beautiful about that is that in turn they help you. So through my work in senior housing, I was lucky, privileged, completely privileged actually to learn so much from prospective residents, from people, from old people. I would sit in somebody's living room and just go deep and just go into the story. And then being able to just the relief of knowing that people survive bad things. The stories of, oh, honey, I had cancer, or I did get a divorce, or I lost a child, God forbid. And I said, wow, people survive all these things. And then from this perspective, it's like so cool. Like, wow, you can actually get through so much in life. And the stories have always been about, because I always ask about your biggest accomplishment, what you're proudest of, you know, what's the one thing? And that's where everybody lights up. You know, that's where everybody, young, old, they light up, because that's where they, oh yeah, I found this thing that I love, whether it's my curiosity for humans, where it's my love of plants, where it's whatever that is. And that was my accomplishment. That's cool.
Yeah.
It just said, oh, cool. You know, we can do this. So back to the hero. That's the hero. Is the hero is not the guy that I know David always talks about. Rescue the lady on the train tracks, right? The Lone Ranger, the hero, Superman that saves the world. What does that mean, right? For all of us. For all of us regular folk. Wow. I use an expression.
That was good.
Regular folk.
That was really good.
It means that I think it means that we have to just actually dare to take the risk to really care and dare to fail, dare to be embarrassed, but really be driven by whatever it is that you value, and you will succeed. And I didn't know this, but I was lucky and I was guided by this curiosity, and I was taught by the best, and especially old people, the beautiful people, not because they're old, but because they are experienced. They have wisdom. They've gone through this stuff. So the other ageist thing is, oh, they're so cute because they're old. Oh, they're too old. Cute people are kissing. That's so cute. It's like, ah, it enrages me. That's you. You know, how would you like that? That's you. That's you. That's going to be you if you're lucky. Think about what that feels like.
Right.
So I really went off the deep end, didn't I?
No, it was really good. So that kind of gets us caught up, I guess, to the point where, you know, you and David met.
Yes.
The obviously what was birthed there to speak or started there in that first community. Really has evolved. And I think what I'm hearing from your story is a lot of what Sherpa is today. And it's easy for me to see. So I've been exposed to Sherpa from the operator side and from the Bridge the Gap partner side, and now to experience it here. We're about to experience the sales culture starter. Is that correct? I keep thinking I'm going to stumble over that. I think I keep getting it right, but
maybe you should change the name to something more catchy.
I don't know. I think it's pretty catchy. I'm just I'm not great with words. So, but I want to talk a little bit and give our listeners what we really, one of our things we want to do is be able to take the great thought leadership and these great principles and these great stories out to this wide audience, this growing audience. Can we talk a little bit about what the purpose of this event is, why you invest so much time and energy in this, and kind of a Cliff Notes version of what they're going to take away? Because I was looking at the agenda. It's beefy. I mean, there's a couple of very intense days. We're kicking it off tonight. But a lot of training, so to speak, a lot of talking. So give us the version from your perspective of the why and
the why.
And what they're going to experience.
So the why of the company is that we want to change the way that the senior living industry sells. We want to change it because we believe very strongly that we're not going about it the right way. We're not producing with this sort of the old way of, again, transactionally selling. Here's what we have and it's wonderful and, you know, buy it. Mm-hmm. So I won't get into like all the reasons why people don't buy what we have to sell and how all of that. But fundamentally, that's our mission. Through a more empathic, authentic, and successful sales approach, which is really grounded in the practice of myself for 15, 20 years of being in the trenches, and certainly David, but it's being in the lab. It's like talking to people, figuring out what made them connect, and understanding at the deep heart of the methodology that people want to be seen. That's why you find so many people want to be seen. They want to be cared about. They want to be acknowledged and they want to belong. So seen, acknowledged, validated, and belonging is really the prospect's journey into our community. They're residents and now they belong to something, but first they have to feel seen. First, the first contact that they have with who we are as operators is, do you care about me? Me as a person, me that loves to ride bikes, me that I don't know anything about you.
Me he's that, a cowboy, that's
loves
all
a cowboy. You, me that loves boots, cowboy boots, and I'm connected to that because I have a story behind that, and you have a story about bicycles or being a hero, because that's a heroic story. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. That's they're really at the core of what our sales process is.
So do you find when people come to this, because I think going back to our conversation with David, one of the things that was also very attractive to you and your curiosity, your enthusiasm, but also the fact that you didn't come from senior living, so you didn't have the baggage. So do you find when people come to this conference, which I'm assuming it's various levels from the C-suite all the way through the field level, do you have to strip some of that back first before you even have something to work with?
That's so smart of you. Yes, there's an unlearning that has to happen. So what usually happens is that there's like a paradigm shift. There's all of a sudden, for many people, it's like, oh, I drank the Kool-Aid, I saw the light. It's almost like a little bit of a, you know, like religious event. Not religious, but you know. Not religious.
I'm getting nervous.
I know. Okay. It's almost like, wow, a revival. It's like, thank you. So many of the takeaways are, thank you for giving me permission to be real. Thank you for explaining with data and with a very specific set of actionable things that I can do. And do that from a place that's authentic. Thank you for helping me understand that the biggest barrier to me converting and being more converting more sales and being successful for everybody is my own self, my ego, that gets in the way, and sometimes the way I'm managed. So, and then for the C-suite, it's like, interesting. What we're doing isn't working. Maybe this stuff works, but can I make it work? Because, wow, it seems really complicated. Or either woo-woo, okay, we're all building relationships. That's not what we mean. We mean we hope that they take away this understanding that you can put empathy, connection, actual care, understanding who your prospect is and what they're going through in terms of emotionally transitioning in their lives, not looking for an apartment or care for mom, is so much more than that. And once they realize that, okay, here's a different view of our customer and it resonates. Because if it was me that was 87 and had lived in my home for 50 years, I probably wouldn't want to go to one of those places either. And I own them.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would want to have my little life. So then it resonates. And then we give them real data. Because this is so wonderful about now being able to have so much data that measures empathy. It measures connection. When I designed Sherpa, I designed it as a blank canvas. You know, I realized that everything that I did for as a painter, as a curious person about other people, was now I said, okay, great, this works actually. When you're present, when you're really with someone, when you say, I see you, tell me about you. I'm interested in you, I'm curious about you, and all these other scripts go out the window and the person now feels connected. I say, wow, this place cares about me. So the other one had the pool, but this place cares about me. What an incredible competitive advantage
so true.
We have, right?
Yeah.
And that's proven over and over, over years of consulting. So that's what we hope they take away, and the fact that they also understand that you can measure certain behaviors that demonstrate curiosity, connection, curiosity, you know, and then giving the salespeople and everybody in the organization an opportunity to paint a picture of each one of their prospects, their customers. That's what a prospect profiling Sherpa is. That's what it was always intended to be. Here's a blank canvas. Here's Mary Jones. Here's his daughter, blah, blah, blah. Now paint me a picture. What does she look like? What was her life like? What was her story? What does she value? What is a day like? What happens to Mary when she wakes up in the morning? What's the first thing she thinks about? Imagine if we have, I imagined, and that's what we did here, I imagine having this blank canvas that could draw each one of our potential customers. And then you build this rich, but in order to do that, I was hoping that giving them this tool, salespeople, you know, like I was one, would say, oh, hey, this is cool. It tells me that I need to go learn about life stories, so I'm going to go ask. Mm-hmm. That was the intention behind it. Like, okay, I want to motivate that behavior, that curiosity. And that's why the case study. And then my thought was that if the prospect would read their own profile seen by, they would recognize themselves. They would say, wow, look at how that person saw me. You know, the power of someone filling your profile and saying, this is what I know about you. And then seeing your own story reflected by somebody else's interest in you. And told inside the prospect profile at Sherpa.
That's super cool.
That's it.
That's super cool.
And that's how you change culture.
Yeah.
And that's how you change culture.
Do you see Mind what drop. She did with the thread of the canvas through this whole story?
A true artist.
Yeah. So now, curiosity, are you still painting? It seems like it was a big part of your life, obviously.
I paint here. I paint here all the time.
Do you have paint? I've seen many paintings.
No, I don't actually paint.
But you paint humans.
I do. I paint with a team. I have opportunities to think about, to imagine the next picture, the next the next thing. Sometimes, you know, running the business and operating the business gets a little bit in the way of innovation. But, oh, here's the thing. I think it's important to be on purpose, designate whatever operation, however in your operations, designate time for innovation, designate time for sometime, I don't know, once a quarter for 2 hours, it's like, I made a weird noise.
Yeah, that's good. It sounded good. It sounded good. Our listeners will appreciate that.
Okay, so here's what you do. You just allow for free thinking and hey, nothing's going to come of this. We got lots of problems. We have operational issues. We have to figure out this thing. We have to run. We have to answer. We have to do all these things. But let's allow ourselves half a day for everybody to bring in a cool idea. It doesn't even have to be about work, but just something that you dream about, something that you say, well, you know what, if I could, and you can't limit, you can't be limited by, limit yourself by it's too much money, it's this, it's that. It's like, it's a day, designated day to bring in cool ideas out of the box, even though with the understanding we never do it, but we're going to share that. And I think we should all do it. And that's what I get to do here occasionally. And I love it. And
but maybe we need to have another podcast just on like our cool ideas and just share.
Yes.
Yeah. Just let it flow.
Just let it flow.
And who knows if somebody might be actually out there cool enough and crazy enough to do one of our ideas.
Thank you.
Is that not the cool
that's
thing?
That's absolutely the cool thing. This is the thing. It's the things that make no sense that make the most sense, because we're trying to make sense of our day, of our lives, and does it fit, you know, am I, you know, fulfilling all these expectations, but we don't give ourselves permission to, and I get we're all busy, I get that, bad excuse, to actually let our juices flow and say, hey, look, let's dream today and let's give us ourselves a few hours of just what could be without limiting our, without judging, without, so it's called, I guess, blue hat thinking, I think 16, I shouldn't quote the book because I don't remember if it's the blue hat. I think it's the blue hat. Doesn't matter. It's allowing yourself to suspend judgment, which for all of us is very difficult to do because the ego has to go out the window, and maybe you have a really stupid idea and other people say, that's a stupid idea.
And I have a lot of those.
You don't know. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Don't you love stupid ideas? And the other thing is, I love stupid ideas. The ones that are just not restricted by, well, how are we going to execute on that? So anyway, I think you should have a podcast. Just blue hat thinking. I shouldn't keep quoting the blue hat because I don't know if it's a blue hat.
It's a new quote. Yeah, it's not interesting. We're going to quote it.
Non-judgmental. And by the way, this is what we do when we do case studies in Sherpa. When we teach and train, we talk about planning a lot. Oh, okay, planning, what does it mean? Blah, blah, blah. What planning means is like just you get together and you know, you say, okay, what do I know about this person? But then you go, let's throw out a bunch of stupid ideas of things we could do. No judgment. Well, we could, you know, we could just go come over with a big pot of soup. Okay, well, maybe that's a stupid idea, or maybe that's, you know, can't happen. We don't have the time. Who's going to make the soup? We talk ourselves out of a lot of ideas. But that's what planning is. It's like the best part of planning for a prospect as a very important sales activity has to do with saying, let's just brainstorm. Let's just be creative. That's where I get to paint too. Let's be creative. Let's think about all these different scenarios and then dare each other as a team to do it. If it resonates, if it's authentic, and if it's based on your desire to help that person because you're connected to them.
Super cool.
We are in for a big treat here in St. Louis at the Sherpa headquarters and at the sales culture starter.
See, it's not as easy as you
easy
think.
Easy for me to say.
SCS. Let's go. No, that's worse.
We're going to change culture and learn a lot and have a lot of fun doing it. And so my takeaway is a former lawyer and a former portrait artist meet, and then they create Sherpa.
Beautiful art. That's right. Human art.
Great story. Thank you, Alex, so much for sitting down with us. It's been a very fulfilling and introspective discussion that definitely has our egos on check and our brains on go. And we're really looking forward to spending some more time with you guys. Thank you for your partnership. We believe in what you're doing. We thank you for believing in what we are doing. And we're going to go out and change the world together.
We are going to do that. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful. Thanks.
It's been awesome.
And thanks for joining us on another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
The podcast team wants to hear from you. If you're on Instagram, let us know your takeaways. Take a screenshot of the show you just listened to, tag BTG Voice, and we might just share your thoughts. Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap.
Josh, one of the great things about the podcast is being able to partner with some of the best in the business. And our partnership with Sherpa is exciting because of what they believe in and the culture that they're trying to change in the marketplace.
It's so consistent with our mission, our vision, and it's so fun spending time with them. And as you probably just discovered, just as I did, we can't hardly make them talk about themselves. They want to talk about everybody else. They want to get to know you. And it's all about the relationship and what they can help guide you to and solve for you. So I love it. I love the culture here. We're here at the sales culture starter. And it's just a fascinating event. So glad that Sherpa is our partner.
Yeah. And we got a lot coming up, a lot of great content that's going to be coming out from this event and many more as we dive into the culture of sales. And this is part of the engine that drives almost every business. And there's a shift in the sales world in general, and there should be a shift in the way that we sell to older adults and their adult children.
Yeah, and it's not a bad word to talk about sales.
That's right. The senior living industry has a lot to offer, and that should be highlighted. And those values, communicated back in a way that is meaningful to bring dignity to the lives of those that are finishing out the final chapters of their life.
So big thanks to Sherpa for the partnership.